Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. So this is just shocking news that has come out. SBF pretty much has revealed everything on Twitter via DMs. I mean, if that's not a Gen X millennial thing to do, I don't know what is. But I think he was maybe DMing back and forth with this reporter gal for Vox, assuming that this was all in confidence. And the reporter said, oh, well, screw you, Sam. I'm going to put it out there. It's, you know, reporters and journalists, most of them are just complete bottom of the barrel. I mean, they are just ethically bankrupt. And, you know, I've had them screw me over just so many times in the past, just countless times. And they'll always tell you, oh, yeah, this is off the record, off the record. And then they'll go ahead and just throw it out there anyway and completely go back on their word. And in this case, she's probably doing it because she knows, you know, what's SBF going to do now? He's got bigger fish to fry. He's not going to come after me. So I'm assuming that this is why it was leaked. But let's go to this Vox article where the gal actually posts screenshots of the DM exchange between her and SBF on Twitter. And this is incredibly telling. I mean, this really gives you insights as to what actually happened behind the scenes and what caused this epic collapse that we've seen over the past couple of weeks. So the title here, and you know, Vox is going to be very sympathetic overall, although this gal probably screwed him over. But overall, they're going to be sympathetic to Fried because a lot of his altruism buddies work at Vox. And I think actually this Kelsey gal was part of his group. And the group I'm referring to, if you didn't see my whiteboard video last night, which I highly suggest, this group was called EA Global, Effective Altruism Global. And it's just a bunch of kids that are, you know, big Harry Potter fans, and their parents are liberals and they're just do-gooders. They don't understand why that's not a good idea, even if you're trying to help the poor. And but my point is, there are a lot of these people that were in this group that actually work at Vox, which is no surprise. So let's get down into the back and forth here on Twitter, where it's just shocking what he divulged. I know Jim Rickards just tweeted, he said, the first thing that you learn when you're going to a lawsuit, or the first thing the lawyer tells you, is shut up, don't say anything, and let me take it from here. And I've been in lawsuits before. I've been on both sides of lawsuits, and I've gone through depositions and all these things. I've been deposed, and you know, an 8-hour of just being grilled by the other side's lawyers. I've been there, done that. Trust me, it's not fun. But unless you're directly being deposed by the other legal team, it's just pretty much common sense that you know, okay, don't say anything, because we always see it in movies. Anything that you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. It's like we've heard this since we were like 3 years old, since we could turn on the TV. They probably say it in cartoons, for heaven's sakes. And then he's going and just DMing people on Twitter. It's just, you know, it shows you how I think his worldview was just unbelievably childish. Like he had the mentality of like a 5-year-old, but he was just in a 30-year-old body. And I mean, it would make sense when you see the people that he surrounded himself by. I mean, he's running billions and billions of dollars, and he's not hiring adults. He's not hiring people that have any experience in accounting. The only people he's hiring are his Harry Potter buddies that are dressing up like wood nymphs and doing cosplay. I mean, listen, you need some adults in the room. I mean, and I know, you know, I was an entrepreneur for many, many years, and I started businesses right out of college. So I know what it's like to know nothing. And I know what it's like to do your own QuickBooks and your own account. I know how confusing it can be, even if you've got 2 or 3 bank accounts and 5 or 6 customers, let alone 1 million customers and billions and billions and billions of going back and forth. And you figure out really, really quick that as soon as you can afford a professional accountant, you need to hire one. As soon as you can afford an adult with some experience to manage your books, you hire one. And I think out of everything that he did wrong, that's probably his biggest mistake, is he just didn't hire anyone that was competent. He just hired the Harry Potter fan club. And what do you expect? But let's go through this here. So the Vox gal is in blue, and then SBF is here in the gray. So you said a lot of stuff about you wanted to make regulation, just good ones. Was that pretty much PR too? So there's no one really out there making sure good things happen and bad things don't. Again, just such a childish view. Like, how do you even define good and bad? And who is the arbiter of good and bad, right? It says usually there's only one toggle, do more or do less. Yeah, just PR. He says, F the regulators. I'd actually agree with him there. They're making everything worse. Definitely agree with him there. They don't protect customers at all. Definitely agree with him there. So far, I'm seeing eye to eye here with SBF, but that won't last long. So then she says, does it seem like some kind of customer protection would be good, though? You always know you're dealing with a mental giant when they spell though, T-H-O. And I get it, they're abbreviating, but again, let's a clear indication that there are not only any adults working at Alameda or FTX, but there are also no adults that are working at Vox. Like, oh, I love that. I oh my gosh. Oh, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but oh, that is such a pet peeve of mine when people talk like, and you know, it used to just be women that talked like this, but now it's these soy boy dudes like SBF that actually talk like this as well. Like whenever they're making a statement, they always sound like they're asking a question. Like they're like, instead of saying they're making everything worse, it's they're making everything worse. Like they're so feeble and they have so low testosterone that they can't even make a statement without just like throwing it out there and then retreating back to the corner and shivering like a beaten puppy dog. It just drives me crazy. Like maybe regulators can't deliver it. Like, okay. Like, but like, oh my gosh, drives me nuts. Anyway, but sure does look like consumers lose their shirts a bunch. Agreed on both. It would be good, but regulators can't do it. And you couldn't do it, and CZ sure isn't doing it. So who? They can't actually distinguish between good and bad. Don't you think that applies to altruism as well, Sam? You ever thought that one through? And by the way, with altruism, all you're doing, and Peter Schiff points this out brilliantly, the do-gooders always focus on the demand side, as though just increasing demand is somehow going to improve the lot of the poor and middle class in aggregate total. We see how that worked in 2020 and 2021. If you don't increase the supply side, the only thing you're doing is creating inflation, which just makes it worse. So if you really want to do good, focus on the supply side, not the demand side, i.e. let entrepreneurs keep more of their money and focus less on just giving out free money to people that are poor. It's very counterintuitive, but ironically, that helps the lot of the poor a lot better over the long run than just handing them money for the short term. Then he goes on to say, just do more business versus do less business and put up more moats versus put up fewer moats. No one will, but you know the truth. No one's doing this in the rest of finance either. Or for that matter, there are areas that are regulated. The FDA isn't helping. Giant crackdown on big tech has no point or goal, philosophy behind it. OFAC is solely undermining U.S. interests globally. And then he goes on to say that ESG has been perverted beyond recognition. So again, I would agree with him here. Now, I'm sure he's a massive proponent of ESG, where I am not, but I would agree with him that the ESG movement, the do-gooders part of it, has been completely perverted and used for the benefit of people like Larry Fink at BlackRock, who don't care about ESG. They don't care about polar bears. They only care about just increasing their assets under management and having a good excuse to charge their do-gooder clients even higher and higher fees. But what surprises me here is he can't see the problem with regulation, and that it never, whatever the intention of the regulation, the way it's implemented by central planners and authoritarians, it always turns out to have the inverse result of whatever the intention was. And again, this is why in going through this, I kind of come to the conclusion that he's like a five-year-old stuck in like a 30-year-old body, a very childish worldview. At the very least, a very inexperienced worldview. So then she says, I'm sort of putting the picture together. You don't believe anyone is doing anything for good reasons. You don't believe the good guys are good. So why not make it big and then be the one who gets to decide what good is? And if you have to do sketchy stuff along the way, everyone else is doing it and plenty of them are worse and people still like them as long as they win. Is that fair? So she's basically, you know, putting words in his mouth saying, is this kind of your thought process here? Meaning that everyone else is doing bad, but you're at your core, you're one of the good guys. So like Machiavellian would teach us, in order to do good, sometimes we have to do bad. And maybe that bad is breaking the law, but you're just trying to break the law a little bit just to buy you time so you can outcompete all the bad guys. And then you can go ahead and fill the holes, meaning all the customer's money that you borrowed, and no one will be any wiser. And then as long as you win, the end justifies the means. What we're left with at the end of the day is only the rich can invest. Only they can make or lose their money. This is so powerful, and not for the reasons that he would suggest. Let me be clear, or let me be more specific. When I was growing up, and I think a lot of you on the live stream can relate to this, nobody thought to themselves as a 13-year-old, hey, you know what? I'm going to get rich by investing. No one even thought that investing was a thing. Like I didn't even know about investing until I was in my late 20s. Like, nobody talked about investing. I didn't hear anybody talk about investing until the dot-com thing, until the mid-90s. And up into that, I mean, and I, at that time I was, what would I have been? I mean, you know, in my 20s, in my mid-20s or early 20s. But now, you know, you see these 13 and 15-year-old kids that want to get rich quick just by crypto. Well, again, not only did we not have any idea about getting rich quick, investing wasn't even a topic of discussion. Back then, the only way that we thought we could get rich is by starting a business and basically working harder than everybody else. That was growing up, you know, with me and my buddies when we were young, that's how we thought, okay, this is the only way you can get rich. You've got to work harder than everybody else. You've got to sacrifice things that other people aren't willing to sacrifice. And usually that means starting your own business and producing goods and services. But see, SBF is from an entirely different generation, where the generation has been brainwashed to believe that the only way that you can make it in life is by investing, or I would say speculating. We've turned the entire society into a group of avid gamblers, where they don't even think about the fact, oh, hey, you know what? Maybe I can start a business that produces a good or service. Now, I realize that he started an exchange just to basically take, just so people could trade Ponzi schemes back and forth, what he calls black boxes. But again, it's built on this financial model and in the financial economy. It has nothing to do with the real economy whatsoever. And that's the big mind shift change between generations that, quite frankly, you can put on the shoulders of the Federal Reserve and the central planners. They created this. They created a society of gamblers where, due to their, you know, inflation targets and always devaluing the purchasing power of the dollar relative to goods and services, they literally force people to go out there and take speculative risk. Because if they don't, they're just going to lose their entire savings to consumer price inflation. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out-of-control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow rebel capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. Okay, now I digress. Let's get back to the what he's saying here. He says, there's some truth to it, but it also true that I didn't want to do sketchy stuff. There are huge negative effects from it, and I didn't mean to. So again, this is completely unbelievable that someone that knew they're going to be, they've got this target on their back, this legal target that has stepped down from being CEO and put in the lawyer that managed the bankruptcy of Enron. I don't know if you guys knew that, but that's the new CEO of FTX. SBF stepped down and he hired the lawyer that managed the bankruptcy of Enron. And he did that prior to sending out these tweets. Again, unbelievable, unbelievable. But it shows his just, he's very mentally, psychologically immature, like a child. Like he just can't even control, I've got to get out there and tweet, and this person's my friend, and I've got to respond to my friend because I'm altruistic. And I remember we had such a great time at that Harry Potter festival, and you know, just thinking like a little kid. I mean, basically what he's doing there is he's admitting that he did things illegal. I mean, talk about the if the court, if they decide to prosecute him, I mean, it's pretty much an easy case. Then he goes on to say, each individual's decision seemed fine, and I didn't realize how big their sum was until the end. So each little time I broke the law, I didn't think it was a big deal, and I was only doing it for the greater good because I wanted to make all this money, and I wanted to just give it away. I wanted to eradicate poverty. I wanted to cure cancer. I wanted to be the do-gooder of all do-gooders. And I was willing to bend the rules a little bit to make it happen. Because like Machiavelli says, end justifies the means. Sometimes to do good, you got to be bad. And that is a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous place to be in. So he thought he was just stretching or breaking the rules a little bit that no one would ever notice. But he didn't realize, because he had no adults there in the accounting team, he had the wood nymphs and the cosplay people and the people that are, you know, I'll bet you his entire team at FTX and Alameda was more concerned about their pronouns than they were about understanding the accounting of what was happening with the bank accounts and all the customer accounts with FTX and Alameda. Just a guess. But the main point here is he made all these little white lies, and he didn't realize that the sum total of the white lies was going to come back and haunt him. I was just re-listening to the conversation we had this summer about whether you should do unethical S for the greater good. And then he's talking about unethical things like running Philip Morris. Again, just a childish view. That you can only see the negative parts of. Now, I'm not saying on net balance they're positive, but in their little childish worldview, I guarantee you they're not going through a cost-benefit analysis. And he basically agrees, yes, yes, yes. He said, oh, I said all that dumb S. He says, everyone goes around pretending that perception reflects reality. It doesn't. Some of this decade's greatest heroes will never be known. And some of its most beloved people are basically shams. And you know what's ironic there is I don't even think he's talking about himself. So you kind of don't believe in like doing unethical S as anything other than a judgment we bestow upon the losers. He said a month ago, CZ was walking around, don't do unethical or your money is worthless. And now he's a hero. Is it because he's virtuous or because he had a bigger balance sheet? So he won. You know, one of the conversations I had with Josh is this kid has never run a business in his life. He's never even run a lemonade stand. And he just gets thrown into this situation where he's managing billions and billions of dollars and he has zero experience. Not only does he have zero entrepreneurial experience, but he has zero life experience. And this is just, I mean, in a way, I feel sorry for the kid because how naive could you possibly be? Like, yes, guess what, Sam? The guy with the biggest balance sheet's going to win. I could have told you that when I was 20 years old because I had common sense, because I had life experience. It's like he's been coddled for his entire life. And he was just kind of released out into the wild. You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of the movie Elf, when with Will Ferrell, who he grew up with on the North Pole with all the elves and Santa Claus. And then he just, you know, then 2 days later, he's like in New York City. That's exactly what happened to Sam. Welcome to the real world, my friend. Yeah, welcome to the real world. So the ethics, mostly a front. People like you, if you win, and hate you if you lose, and that's how it all really works. Yeah, says, I mean, not all of it, but it's a lot. The worst quadrant is sketchy plus loose, and best is win plus question mark. Okay, clean, loose, terrible. You were really good at talking about ethics for someone who kind of saw it all as a game with winners and losers. Yeah, I had to be. It's what reputations are made of to some extent. I feel bad for those who got screwed by this dumb game we woke Westerners play, where we say all the right shibboleths. I think that's a Jewish term. And so everyone likes us. Now she gets into some of the details of FTX here. You tweeted out some stuff like you never invest your deposits. That was BS, right? He goes, it was factually accurate, huh? But their deposits were totally not there. Or did you mean technically it was Alameda? He goes, FTX, basically correct. So FTX technically wasn't gambling with their money. FTX had just loaned their money to Alameda, who had gambled their money and lost it. And you didn't realize it was a big deal because you didn't realize how much money it was. And also, so he's agreeing. And also that Alameda had enough collateral to reasonably cover it. And the collateral he's talking about is the FTT token. Exactly what I went over in the whiteboard video. So he thought, well, why not? Yes, it's shady. Yes, it's illegal to have Alameda borrow the money from FTX, let's say, which is customer funds. But who really cares? Because at the end of the day, Alameda can cover it because the value, perceived value of my FTT token is $30. When he himself knew that all that FTT token was a big black box of hype. That's it. His asset was hype and PR. It wasn't real tangible stuff that you can use to buy groceries at the store. I get how you could have gotten away with it, but I guess it seems sketchy even if you get away with it. It says it was never the intention. Sometimes life just creeps up on you. Yeah. So here, again, I think the main issue here is he's a child living in an adult's body, number one. No life experience, no business experience whatsoever. And he was one of these do-gooders that just got caught up in the game, as he admits. And he saw everyone else around him was corrupt and, you know, running these scams or breaking the law. And he thought to himself that he needed to do the same thing to keep up. And it was justified because if he wins, he's one of the good guys and he's going to be able to change the world. Where if the other guys win, then they're evil and they're just greedy capitalists that are going to make the world and the universe even worse. So it's this like martyr complex. And then lastly, that the biggest mistake he made is he just hired all of his Harry Potter buddies, all the cosplay folks that worry about the pronouns and just worry about, you know, giving away food and giving away all their money. And they just think that's the way that you're going to make it in life, or that's the way that you make the world a better place. Meanwhile, they're just trading Ponzi schemes back and forth and patting themselves on the back. And like I said at the beginning, I think as an entrepreneur looking at this, someone who's had a lot of experience like I have, that I'm setting all the illegal stuff aside, that was the big mistake he made here. He refused to hire an adult or someone with experience, business experience or life experience for that matter. Just completely naive, just remarkably naive. So then he goes on to say messy accounting plus margin exchange, position built over time through retrospect, Luna crash was when a lot of it happened, but messy accounting, and he didn't realize it until a few weeks ago. So you've got altruism, you've got fraud, you've got ignorance, you've got a lack of experience, and then you've got this belief that he had that crypto was just going to continue to go up and up and up and up forever, and he just got caught up in the bubble, just like everyone else. And he said if he had to do it over again, he would have really separated Alameda from FTX. Yeah, that would have been a good idea, Sam. And if you actually would have hired someone that had some experience in doing something other than dressing up like a fictional character, you probably would have got that done. So that's the gist of it, guys. You can go ahead and just Google Vox and Google SBF, and you can read the whole thing. But I mean, it gets even more crazy. But those, I read the whole thing last night, and those are really my takeaways from it. He goes on to say later on that nothing is black and white. And again, I totally agree with him. It's always various shades of gray. And you can't sit there and say, well, this whole thing happened as a result of fraud. That was part of it, part of the story, but that's not the entire story at all. Not even close. You're missing out on 90% of the story if all you do is just fixate on the fraud component of what was going on there. And I think that's unfortunate, because if you only fixate on 10%, you miss out on the other 90% of what happened that could be very valuable to you from the standpoint of powerful lessons that you can learn from the mistakes that were made by SBF and over at FTX. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you in the next video.